Good morning. It's Monday, August 5th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how the image of a starving Palestinian child ended up saving his life, why a pair of astronauts have been stuck in space for almost 2 months, and a quick catch-up from the games in Paris. But first, to the story of one American still imprisoned in Russia after last week's historic international prisoner exchange. That deal involved at least 6 countries and more than 20 detainees, including the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, former Marine Paul Whelan, and journalist Alsu Kumasheva. But the family of imprisoned American teacher Mark Fogel is still waiting. The 63-year-old was detained in Russia in August of 2021 and convicted of smuggling a small amount of medical marijuana, which was prescribed in the U.S. for back pain. The substance is still banned in Russia. He's 2 years into serving a 14-year sentence. Fogel taught at the Anglo-American School of Moscow. He spent 27 years teaching at international schools in places like Oman, Venezuela, and Malaysia. While in Russian custody, he's been teaching prisoners English. His family told PBS they weren't sure on Friday if Fogel was part of the prisoner swap, and it wasn't until they got a call from him while in a prison 200 miles north of Moscow that they learned he wasn't included. Here's his sister, Anne Fogel.
When I realized that he was still in Rybinsk and everyone else had been pulled out of their penal colonies, my heart really sank. But it's really hard to give up hope. And for the entire day, I roller coastered around thinking that, you know, Rybinsk is about 4.5 hours from Moscow. And I thought that maybe they would be driving him down, or it was just really hard to let it go.
Mark Fogel is one of multiple Americans still in Russia. The Wall Street Journal estimates there are as many as 20 American and dual American Russian citizens still being held in prisons or labor camps. Here's his sister again.
We just don't have the notoriety, the celebrity status. And believe me, the worst part of this process is being pitted against other Americans. I don't want that. No one wants that. Mark doesn't want that.
Senator Bob Casey, who represents Pennsylvania, where Fogel's from, called Friday's historic deal good news for Gershkovich and Whelan, but a sad day for Fogel and his family. He said Fogel's 95-year-old mother fears she'll never see him again. The Biden administration says they're working on bringing Fogel home and that they've already secured the release of 55 American captives since 2022. Now to the war in Gaza, where an airstrike over the weekend killed at least 30 people at a school that was functioning as a shelter. Palestinian officials say most of the victims are women and children. The war has been catastrophic for Palestinian children. Almost every single one has been displaced. Thousands are dead, injured, or missing. And roughly 1 in 3 kids in northern Gaza face the threat of famine. The Washington Post has the story of a young boy who badly needed medical attention and managed to get out. He's just one of around 5,000 people who've been approved to leave Gaza for medical treatment. At least 10,000 others meet the definition of needing critical care, according to the World Health Organization.
This is one boy who got out, and that's simply not the case for many people who are stuck in Gaza.
Reporter Ruby Mellon told us about 6-year-old Fadi Alzant. Images of him taken by a pair of Gaza journalists went viral several months ago.
And if you look at the videos, you can see he's just completely emaciated. I mean, his skin was basically so pale that, you know, it appeared black and blue. He was isolated in a barely functioning hospital in northern Gaza. He had no medication for his condition.
Fadi has cystic fibrosis, a condition that means he has twice the calorie needs as other kids his age. He takes medication to help clear his airways. Before the war, he had a good medical routine and a good life.
He was a relatively carefree boy. He loved cars. He loved ice cream. He loved playing in his backyard.
But by the spring, about 6 months into the war, so much had changed. Israeli strikes had decimated Gaza's health system. Aid groups were having a difficult time getting critical supplies through Israeli blockades, with trucks lined up at the border. The UN was sounding the alarm, saying northern Gaza was facing famine. Fadi lost half of his body weight, dropping to about 20 pounds.
He began to starve, basically.
The images of him caught the attention of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which coordinated with the WHO and the Israeli government to get Fadi out of Gaza. He went to Egypt, then to New York, where he's with his mom getting long-term treatment. When Mellon met him, he was dehydrated, in pain, and struggling to breathe. His stomach was distended, a sign of severe malnutrition. But he is doing better today, Mellon told us. His appetite is back, and he's gained some weight. He was discharged at the end of May, leaving hand in hand with his mom. The future is uncertain for this family, which has been separated by the war like so many other Palestinians. Fadi needs weekly doctor's visits, and he'll need to take expensive medication for the rest of his life. His mom is eager to reunite with Fadi's siblings in Egypt, where he could get some of that treatment. But in Gaza, where his dad is, Mellon told us, it'll be practically impossible to find. Just about 2 months ago, astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams embarked on what was supposed to be a roughly 10-day mission to the International Space Station.
Let's get going. Now let's put some fire in this rocket. Now let's push it to the heavens where all these tough Americans have prepared it to be.
Let's go, Calypso. Take us to space and back.
This was the first manned test of the Starliner spacecraft built by Boeing. And while they made it to the International Space Station safely, a bunch of issues came up that made it unsafe to travel home right away. Helium leaks, thrusters that shut off unexpectedly. The sort of snappy headline here is stuck in space. But the way NASA and Boeing are putting it, they decided to extend the mission and use this time while the Starliner is in space to figure out solutions to these types of problems, since they could run tests in real time. But the clock is ticking, and there's still no return date for Wilmore and Williams. They say they're feeling optimistic about the mission overall. In mid-July, they gave this update, floating in zero gravity.
I have a real good feeling in my heart that this spacecraft will bring us home, no problem.
There have been multiple issues with every spacecraft that's ever been designed, and that's the nature of what we do. You know, that mantra you've heard, failure is not an option. That's why we are staying here now.
Overall, Boeing's venture into commercial space hasn't been going very well. Since partnering with NASA in 2014, Vox reports there have been three problematic launches. And this all comes as Boeing is under scrutiny for issues with its airplanes. There have been several federal probes into the company's manufacturing quality and safety regulations. Boeing reported a $1.44 billion net loss in the second quarter of this year. And this Starliner mission is projected to lose hundreds of millions of dollars alone. But in the meantime, we've got to get these astronauts back home. Ars Technica reports NASA is considering an alternative plan with SpaceX in case they're not confident in Starliner's ability to bring Williams and Wilmore home safely. Before we let you go, a roundup of some storylines from the Olympics you might have missed this weekend. You've likely heard the big headlines. Simone Biles took home another gold for a stunning vault performance. Steven Nadarozic, affectionately nicknamed Pommel Horse Guy by the internet, got the bronze. Katie Ledecky won another gold in the women's 800-meter freestyle, her fourth consecutive Olympic gold medal in that event, bringing her career total up to 9 and tying her for most golds ever by a woman Olympian. And in a stunning photo finish race that stumped even the announcers, Noah Lyles claimed the title of fastest man in the world, taking home gold in a true nail-biter in the 100-meter sprint. And that wasn't the only shocker this weekend. Sha'Carri Richardson, the fastest woman in the world, was beat by Julian Alfred in the women's 100-meter, who finished the race in 10.72 seconds.
And this was no contest. It was not close.
That means Alfred, who is from St. Lucia, took home the gold, winning her country's first ever medal. And as you heard there, she had the honor of ringing the Olympic bell. On the men's side of track and field, in what may go down as the biggest tragedy of the Paris Olympics, 18-year-old Mozambique runner Steven Sabino was disqualified from the men's 100 meters prelims when he sprang off his starting block early before the starting gun. International track and field adopted a zero-tolerance policy for false starts about a decade ago. Yahoo Sports explained the whole field used to be delayed before they changed the rule to personally penalize the individual athlete. Yahoo calls it the cruelest rule in sports. Sabino told reporters he's dreamed of running in this race since he was 8 years old. And finally, it was another strong weekend for American gymnast Suni Lee. So far, she's racked up one gold and two bronze medals at this year's Games. It's been a tough road for Lee since her gold medal debut in Tokyo. Since the spotlight of those games, she's dealt with stalkers and says she had to move her college education online. She was diagnosed with two types of kidney disease, which forced her to stop competing at the college level early. And her medication would often make her feel swollen and exhausted. As the New York Times reports, Lee wasn't even able to return full-time to training for Paris until early this year. So it was an emotional moment when she made the team.
Well, I was just reminded of my goals every day and constantly surrounded by people who never let me give up. And I'm so thankful because a year ago, I didn't even think this was...
Lee has said she has learned just how tough and resilient she can be. And this whole experience just sharpened her vision for Paris. You can follow all the Olympic action today in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next from the Atavist magazine that follows the difficult recovery of another child from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike and came to the U.S. for medical care and to learn how to walk again. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.